All right, thank you very much. Just set it right there. Tonight, we have a speaker, a young lady, who I've known several years now, quite a few. And I've seen her basically when she came in. I've watched her go through trials and tribulations, go through some serious things, and also express extreme joy. I've had pleasure of working with her personally on some things. And the number one thing that I can guarantee you is that I can call her friend. She has quite a dynamic personality. I'm sure she'll show that when she comes up here. You can't help but know that who's speaking. This is a wonderful woman. I can't wait to hear her story. And her name is Mary Jo S.
I wrote notes because sometimes I ramble. I'm Mary Jo and I am an alcoholic.
Hello, Mary Jo.
Hi, everybody. My sobriety date is December the 8th of 2009. And we'll start from the beginning. My parents have been married for 52 years and I am one of six children. There are four boys in my family and two girls. I'm the second oldest. And of my brothers and sisters, I am the only one that's left-handed, and I'm the only one with brown eyes. So from the very beginning, I always thought that I was very special. And I'm also the only alcoholic of my brothers and sisters. You know, every family has stories that they tell, and of course, all of the stories that have to do with me have to do with alcohol. Even my grandparents, when they're telling stories, my grandmother's, one of my grandmother's favorite stories is when I was growing up, my dad was in the Marine Corps and he was overseas. So my mom and my big brother, because I was only two at the time, lived with my grandparents on a Marine Corps base, and my grandfather was a commander in the Navy, and he would come home every evening and, you know, fix himself a scotch on the rocks, and every evening, as a baby, I kept trying to grab his drink, and finally, he thought that he was going to teach me a lesson one day, and he handed me the drink, thinking I would take a sip of it and spit it out and hate it. I downed it, and with tears running down my eyes, I handed him the glass back and said, "More." Nothing changed. You know, and I mean, this was the story, you know, but all through, you know, all of the stories, my parents thought they were hilarious, the drinking stories. And, you know, one year, I was living in Chattanooga, and my parents lived in Kingsport, Tennessee, and I stopped in Knoxville to have lunch with a friend of mine and got completely blasted. Don't remember how I got to Knoxville on Christmas, or to Kingsport on Christmas Eve, and went to midnight mass and sat there and talked to this 90-year-old man all the way through mass. And you know, for years after that, until the man passed, he asked about me all the time because I was just so funny, and I have absolutely no recollection of that whatsoever. So you know, those were the stories that had to do with me. And you know, my sisters were of course very sweet little stories. And my parents, as I was growing up, I would say that they were emotionally unavailable. That, I guess, is the best way to describe it. And even my mother, as she has grown and, you know, gone through therapy as a grown-up as well, you know, she has admitted that, you know, having six kids was just a byproduct of her lifestyle. So they, none of us were planned. We all just kind of happened. So, you know, and in my family, the norm was keeping secrets. When I was about 4 years old, one of my earliest memories was walking in on my mother, and it wasn't with my dad. So, you know, these were the things that I was taught how to do, was to keep secrets, not to tell. And I was also sexually molested from the time that I was 6 years old until the time that I was about 13 years old. Again, taught how to keep secrets and not tell anybody. So this was the norm that I grew up with. And I don't share that because I feel like I'm a victim or anything. I share that because it has shaped every relationship that I have been in my entire life, both male and female. And, you know, up until just a few years ago, was a major factor in almost every relationship. I started drinking when I was 13 years old, and from the very beginning, I was an alcoholic. I drank alcoholically from the very beginning. And from the time that I was 13 until the time that I was 46 years old, I never went more than 3 or 4 weeks without a drink. I didn't drink every day, but when I drank until I was done. And at 13, it was an escape. You know, very dysfunctional family, so... you know, it was a way to not have to think about the things that were going on in my life. And it was a way to fit in because all the cool kids drank, so I drank too. From the time that I started drinking, within a year, I had tried almost every drug that was available. Coke, smoke pot, meth, and for those who are older, Quaaludes. I did them all, and you know, and through the course of that, lost my virginity and everything else, and it all just seemed incredibly normal because the people that I associated with, even at 13, were much older than me, and that was the norm for them, so that was the norm for me. The one thing that the alcohol did do for me was it gave me a great deal of courage as well. Because when I was 14, how I told my mother about the fact that I had been sexually abused for so many years was I was getting in trouble for being drunk, and I wanted to take the spotlight off of me. So I put it on somebody else, and, oh, well, I've been sexually molested. So the good part of that was I did go to therapy for a short time in my teens, and it kind of brought me back to reality a little bit, and it didn't stop the abuse of alcohol. Of course, it did stop the sexual abuse, but it stopped... it slowed down my alcohol abuse. From the time that I was 13 until the time that I was 17, I ran away about 8 times, again, trying to escape. I grew up in Longview, Texas, which is this small town in East Texas. The farthest I ever got was Dallas, but I did get picked up by the Dallas police after I'd been gone for about 3 weeks and brought home again. At 17, when I was a senior in high school, I moved in with my best friend's family to get away from the home situation as it was. And that was my first experience with being around normal people, being around a normal family. They had 3 girls, and I was just another one. So it was so cool, you know, because... Missy's family, they all knew, and I came from a very small town, so everybody knew everybody else, and Christmas and New Year's, everybody's parents went to one house to drink, and all the kids went to the other house to drink. And there's a picture of me online that a girlfriend of mine that I grew up with posted of a Christmas party where I was 15 years old, and we're all sitting there with Schlitz beers in our hand. And my daughter saw this and went, "Is that a beer?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I wasn't 15. I must have been like 22. But no, it was 15. And there's like a 9-year-old in the picture with a beer too. I mean, because that was just, we lived in the middle of nowhere. There wasn't anything else to do. At 20, I met the man of my dreams. He was everything that I had ever wanted at the time. And at 20, he was 6'4". He was 14 years older than me. He was a cowboy, and he was gorgeous. He was also a drug dealer. So it was everything I wanted. Lots of drugs, lots of sex, and he got me out of this little small town because we moved to Houston and lived there. That lasted for about 2 years. He was incredibly abusive physically. But this was normal for me. So I didn't see it as that wrong because I was still getting all the drugs I wanted. So after 2 years of that, I finally realized that this was probably not a real healthy relationship. So he was actually hitting me as we were driving down the road. He was hitting me, and I looked at him, and then I looked at the car door as we're driving down the road and said, "That's a better option," and opened the car door as we were driving down the road and rolled out of the car. I ended up walking for about 10 miles before I realized that I had no idea where I was, and called the one person that I knew that he didn't know in Houston to come get me, and it still took me about 3 or 4 days to have the courage to call my parents to go home. And so at 23, I moved to Tennessee. And it took me 4 years to get a divorce from him because he liked the idea of being married but me not being there, so that he could fool around with lots of people and go, "Oh, I'm sorry, babe, I'm married." So he didn't have to commit to anybody else. So it was a very long and drawn out thing. At 20, I never stopped doing drugs, though. From when I left him at 23, it took me 3 years to stop doing the drugs, but I made up for it by drinking. So it wasn't that hard for me to stop doing drugs, and, you know, I kind of felt like I might have had a problem, but the fact that I could put them down so easily, well, I don't really have a problem. Well, of course I didn't have a problem. I was drinking 3 times as much. So I was just doing something else to make up for it, and I really haven't done any drugs since then, so my story really is all about alcohol. At 29, I was relatively successful in my business, in the business part of my life. But I had a secretary who, she and I shared a very small office, and after about 6 months of that, she couldn't stand the way I smelled in the mornings anymore and told me that she was in AA. And 'cause I drank gin. And anybody who knows about gin, you sweat 80 proof. So in the mornings, you don't smell good. So she finally suggested that I might want to try this AA thing with her sometime. And it took a couple of months for me to go, "Yeah, maybe that's probably not a bad idea." So I did go, and I went for about a year and a half. And during that year and a half, I still didn't stay sober. I never had anything but white chips. I never got to a 30-day, not one time. And I would get to 27 or 28 days and go, "Let's see, I can go ahead and drink and have some fun and come back tomorrow and get a white chip and everybody will hug me and welcome me back and it'll all be good. Or I can wait 2 more days and get that stupid red chip and not be able to drink." I saw AA at that point in my life as a dating service. I went out with lots of guys who were in AA, and I took a couple of them out with me. I had one guy that I was seeing for a while that had 5 years of sobriety, and he drank because I was drinking. And that wasn't a very nice thing for me to do. At 30, when I turned 30, I decided that I needed a change. So I moved to Tampa. And I probably went to half a dozen meetings here, and I met one woman in a meeting. First of all, y'all didn't do it right. And second of all, I met one woman at one meeting who was rude to me, so I decided that I would just forget about AA because this was just stupid anyway. And fortunately and consequently, I met the man who was my second husband very shortly after that, because at that point in my life, he was everything I wanted. He was very stable and successful. He didn't do any drugs, which to me was a big plus. He had never done drugs in his life. Just because he drank like I did didn't mean anything, but he'd never done any drugs. So he was very stable, and we also had lots of sex. So that was, again, a big part of it. But I met him at the same time right after I moved here. So he's also the type of person that likes to take care of somebody. So I was his project. And he was very much like my parents. He was very emotionally unavailable, and lies and secrets were the norm with us. But he was a very generous man, and that made us stay together for quite a bit longer than we needed to. After about a year and a half of living together, we moved in together after a month of knowing each other. And we lived together for about a year and a half, and I actually decided that this wasn't working and I was going to move out. And at that point, he agreed to go to therapy with me. So we went to therapy for about 4 weeks. And the therapist said, you know what, I think next week we should just see one or the other, and we'll just, you know, take turns for a couple of weeks. Mary Jo, why don't you go first? So the very next week I went to therapy, and she goes, you need to leave him. I mean, there wasn't any, what do you think about this? It was, you need to leave him. Well, by this time, I found out that I was pregnant. So I was 32 years old, and I'd never thought about ever having a family. And now here I was with somebody I'd been with for a year and a half, and I really did care about him, and I was going to have a baby. So I decided that we would stay. So I got married when I was 8 months pregnant, and I had my silly Sarah Sunshine, who changed my life in 1994. In 1996, I decided that I wanted to be a better example for her. I'd never been to college, so I decided to go to college at 36 years old, at 34 years, 36 years old I was. I graduated from USF with highest honors in 2000, and I became a teacher. And this was really good for me because I really do to this day believe I'm at my best when I'm helping other people. So it was a wonderful profession, but just like everything that I've ever done in my life, I didn't do it a little bit. You know, I had one daughter at home, and the other 150 that I was spending every day with got more of my time than she did. I'd go to work at 6:30 in the morning and be there till 7 or 8 o'clock at night every day. And all through this, I was part of the cool teachers that we went to happy hour every Friday. And then happy hour on Friday turned into happy hour on Friday and Wednesday. And then, you know, when I finally quit drinking, And told people, they were like, well, we know you like to party, but we didn't realize you were drinking that much, because I compartmentalized. I would go out and drink with this person on Monday, and then on Tuesday night, my husband and I would go to dinner, and I'd get drunk, and then Wednesday night, I'd go to happy hour with a couple of people, and on Thursday night, I'd go to dinner with somebody else, and on Friday, we were doing happy hour with all of us, and then Saturday, of course, was a party, and Sunday was the football games. So I was drinking every day, but I wasn't drinking with the same people. So nobody had any idea how much I was drinking. And in February, one of the best things about my marriage was my mother-in-law. She was like my best friend. She was this little tiny woman. She was about 4'10", and she talked like this. And she had a cigarette and a vodka in one in either hand at all times. And she was the coolest old woman ever. And February of 07, she passed. And not only was I very close to her, of course her son, her firstborn son, was incredibly close to her, and they had been in business together in construction and that kind of stuff for most of his grown life. So when she passed, he withdrew from me even more. And I'm a very affectionate person, and this was very hard for me. And not having any coping skills, not having any idea on what to do with the fact that, you know, the one person that had always been there for me, at least physically, wasn't even there for me physically anymore. This was really hard, and I had no idea what to do. So I drank more and more and more. And towards the end, you know, I would say, I know I'm not an alcoholic because I don't drink at work. Well, I didn't drink at work. I drank before work and immediately after work. And if I wasn't drinking before work, I was still hungover from the night before. So about half the time, you know, I was drunk at work. But I didn't drink at work, so I was okay. And, you know, I lied to myself so much about how much I was drinking. And I would go to different liquor stores and tell them I was having a party to buy that much liquor and have it in my house, you know. But we did. We threw really big parties, so I always had a lot of everything there, because you never knew what everybody was going to want to drink, and I drank it all. I was an equal opportunity, you know. I didn't care. I drank it all. So I had friends that would take, and I drank so much that I had friends, close friends, that would go, and we would sit at the bar, and they'd open a bottle of Patron and pass it around, and everybody would mark it and put $10 in the pot to see how far down I'd go. And I'm like, bet on the bottom. Because I'm not leaving till I'm done. And so I was a very friendly drunk, so nobody really minded. But I did get into a great deal of trouble when I was drinking, and the fact that I'm friendly. As things were deteriorating in my marriage, and this actually came up in a meeting here at 164 Group one night, because I was sitting there reading the big book, as we do, and I do quite often, and we're reading a passage about we end up in sordid places looking for affection, and I'm going, phew. I never went to any sordid places. And then I realized my last big hurrah was in a hotel room off of Nebraska with a teenage boy, pot, and a bottle of Crown Royal. I don't know how it gets any more sordid than that. Well, that was kind of it. And because my mother was the person that she was. And because my first husband was also unfaithful to me quite often, that was one of the things that I said that I would never do. I would never fool around on my husband. So when I did, it ended up on the front page of the newspaper. I told you I don't ever do anything a little bit. Because I was a teacher, it didn't go well. That was in March of 08. It took me till September to get to my first AA meeting because I figured I could do it by myself. It took me about a month before I threw out the liquor. And I poured all of it out down the drain. And my friends are going, why didn't you give it to us? And I said, because for me, it was symbolic. I had to get rid of it myself. And, but I still didn't quit drinking. You know, still on Friday nights when we went out to dinner, I'm going to just have one. Never ended at one. You know, we're just going to go to the beach and I'm going to buy a small bottle of Captain Morgan. Why bother? I tried to stop by myself. I went to church. I would go and on Wednesday, of course I wasn't working, I would go on Wednesday afternoons and sit in the chapel at the church by myself for a couple of hours and pray to God for me not to go drink and leave there and go to a bar. In September, 6 months after my arrest, I had been at my attorney's office and everything was going incredibly well. I was facing 15 years in prison. I went and saw my attorney and everything was going well. He told me that day that we would be able to make a deal. I did not want to go to court because I have a teenage daughter who's in middle school, and that's a hard enough time to have, and to top it all off, have your mom plastered all over the newspaper. So I decided, and I really honestly felt like my husband didn't deserve it. So I decided that I would just make a deal. And we were looking at, we were talking about 5 years of probation. And of course, in my mind, I'm going, for the things that I've done in my life, 5 years of probation, that will definitely cover some of it. So I'm like completely okay with being on probation for 5 years. So I decided to go out and celebrate that day. And my girlfriend, I was meeting a girlfriend of mine who's still a teacher after she got off of work. Well, I got through with my attorney at like 1:30 and she didn't get off work till 3. So I had, you know, about an hour and a half to kill. And so I was just going to go have a drink and wait for her. And I got home at 3 o'clock in the morning. I never met my friend. I never called home. I didn't do anything. And the next day I saw my therapist and I'm like, why do I do this? Why do I just go off like that? And why can't I just call somebody and tell them where I am? Why do I just do this? And he goes, well, you may think I'm crazy, but I might suggest that you might go to an AA meeting. And I was like, psh, I tried AA. That didn't really work for me. And he goes, well, you know, times change and people change. And I'm not saying that you're an alcoholic, but you might. And I'm like, that is the stoop. Okay, I'll go to a meeting. And it took me about a week to finally get up the courage to go. And I sat in the parking lot for 15 minutes before I walked in, because I knew that they were all going to stare at me and know who I was, because I was so important that whenever I walked into a room, when I went to the grocery store, when I went to the movies, everybody was staring at me because they knew who I was. You're that woman. Nobody knew who I was. And that meeting, there were probably 35 people in that room, and because I was a newcomer and said that I was, they went around the room and all said why they were there. And out of the 35 people sitting in that room, I couldn't tell you what any of them said, but I can tell you that I related to 35 people in that room. Every single one of them, when they spoke, I felt what they had felt, and I had done what they had done. And all of a sudden, I knew that I was in the right place. And I felt like, for the first time, that it was over. And I wish I could sit here and tell you that that was it, that I decided that I was in the right place, so I quit drinking. But it didn't work that way. I had to be sure. I did jump in with both feet, and it did take me quite a while to find my first sponsor because I kept testing them. And I would lie to them, and if they believed me, then they weren't the right sponsor for me. But my whole life was lies. My whole life was deception. I didn't trust myself, so I certainly didn't trust any of these people either. And I finally found this one incredibly mean old woman that I figured that I could never lie to her because she'd call me on my shit every single time. And for my first sponsor, she was exactly what I needed. And, you know, and she had 38 years of sobriety, so I'm going, you know what? I'm going to get this now. And I'm going to go through these steps, and by the time that I have a year, they're going to, you know, I'm going to be sponsoring half of Tampa, and they're going to rename this this whole thing after me. They're going to call it Mary Jo's AA. Yeah. Yep, 5 months in, I went to my sister's wedding and sat too long in a bar with her, and she's so cute. She's just tiny and petite, exactly the opposite of me. You know, she's adorable, and she can drink a couple of beers and be adorable, so why can't I? I'm her sister, right? No. From the time that I decided that I was going to have a drink that night, I was going to have a beer with her to, okay, I'm going to have a Crown and Water. Okay, I'm going to have a Crown on the Rocks. Okay, make it a double. And by the time that I left, an hour later, I'd had six doubles because that's how I drink. I don't do anything a little bit. That was in my sister got married in Washington, D.C., so I had to come back to Florida, and I'd had 3 days sober up. Well, nobody will know that I drank up there. So it took me 3 weeks to tell anybody. Of course, my sponsor, when I finally told everybody that I drank, she goes, I knew that. I was just waiting for you to say it. During that 3 weeks, I lost my connection to everything because of the lies that I was telling. And I was blocked off from the sunlight of the Spirit. So I got back into the steps. I started doing them again with a little bit more humility this time. But you know, when you're drinking for 33 years alcoholically, that's a lot of messed up shit. And it doesn't go away overnight. It took me a long time to get something even close to coping skills. At 9 months, I still didn't have any coping skills, and I had some things happen that were not positive. I was still married, but I'd filed for divorce, but I was living in the same house with my husband, and I started seeing someone before I'd even left the house. He wrecked my car because he was drunk. And I didn't want to go home and have to face my husband, who I'm still living with a wrecked car. So what did I do? I went home and tried to kill myself on my daughter's birthday. So they took me to the hospital. I spent 4 days in intensive care. Before I could start my Baker Act. The one thing that I did learn from that was none of it was worth it. I had got to the point that I not only felt useless, I felt like I was destructive to everyone around me. I wasn't just feeling sorry for myself. I was feeling sorry for everyone who had to deal with me. I got a new sponsor at that point, and we did the steps again. This time, my sponsor was a very, very sweet person, and very quiet and very mild-mannered, because my friends all told me, find somebody who has what you want, and that's what I wanted. I wanted to be sweet and mild-mannered and lovely and adorable, and she was awesome. She loved me when I couldn't love myself. And but I'm not a sweet and adorable person. I'm loud and beautiful. But I'm, you know, I tried to be somebody else again, and that didn't really work for me. I have to be my own person, and that's what going through these steps with her taught me, was that I need to be me, not her or anybody else. I spent my whole life trying to be what other people wanted me to be so they would love me, because I learned early on that if I acted a certain way, that I would get certain things. And since I've been sober, I have learned many, many things. And the first of them is to do things in order. The steps are in order for a reason. And, you know, my whole life was never in order. You know, I got pregnant, and then I got married, and then I went to college. Most people do it the other way. So, you know, to slow down and to not expect everything right now. Discipline was something that I never had. I'd never had any discipline, and I learned how, I had to learn how to just accept things the way that they are. And I had to learn how to pray. I had to learn how to be a friend. I remember being a year in and telling someone, I don't even know how to be a friend. I don't even know how to be a real person. And that person is still my best friend. I don't get it. It comes with practice. I had to practice praying. I had to practice meditating because I didn't know how. I don't jump into things as quickly as I used to. I did the fourth and fifth step several times. The first time, I wrote it all out like a novel. And when I was done with it, my sponsor took it and she tore it up into tiny little pieces and said, you never have to live that way again. And that was exactly what I needed to hear that time. And then, of course, we got to the eighth and ninth step, and I was going, what did I? So I learned something very important. The next time I did my fourth and fifth step, because this beautiful woman was a very close friend of mine, she knew most of my story anyway, so that was very painless. After I was sober for about 2 years, I finally decided I needed to do it the right way. I needed to go through it in the book. I'd been coming to this meeting for a long time, and I saw people getting better doing the steps the way they said to do it in the book. And I wanted that. I wanted that. So I did it that way. And now I see, the first time that I did it, I learned that I don't have to be that person anymore. The second time that I did it, I realized that God already knows everything that I've done. So there's no secrets from God. I don't have to hide that anymore. And the third time that I did it, it made me realize that there were patterns to my behavior, not just they're in the past, I don't need to think about them anymore. I realized that there are patterns to everything that I do. And it's been almost a year since I did that. Well, maybe not, like 9 months. And I'm seeing the patterns in other parts of my life. This has been a really slow, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, process. But I'm seeing the patterns in everything that I do. And I see the patterns in the way that I date men. And I see the patterns in the way that I treat my coworkers. And, you know, being aware of them is helping me break those cycles. I don't have to fix anybody anymore. I don't have to be with somebody that I don't love just because they want me to. I also learned that everybody is very different. Nobody does it the way that I do it. And I can't do it the way that anybody else does it. Nobody has my life experiences. We all have shared emotions, and we all have shared feelings, and we all have shared experiences. Yes, it's true. But nobody did them the way that I did them. So I can't tell anybody else, this is what you should do. Because nobody could tell me this is what you should do. I wouldn't have listened to them anyway. All I can do is share my experience and hope that they can learn from that. I find that the heroes that I have in this program aren't the ones who come up here and pick up one white chip and they quit drinking and then their life is rosy and now I have a BMW and I live down on Bayshore and everything is great. I am so thankful that there are people like that. I really am. But my heroes in this program are the people who have real lives like I do, that have real problems, that have been through a divorce in sobriety and live to tell about it. The people who live life on life's terms every day and are still here and they're still joyful. Because that was the one thing that I got out of trying to kill myself. Was every day is truly a gift. And I've been very successful at several careers, but I was never successful at life. And that's the difference now. I don't know that I'm going to be successful at life, but I know that I'm certainly going to try. And I feel happier now than I ever was winning an award as a teacher or winning an award at running a hotel. None of that means anything compared to standing up here and telling people about my real life and about my heart. Because now I don't have any more secrets. I don't have to live in secrets. I don't have to live in lies. And, you know, when I first got sober, I would sit there and have a conversation with you, and you would go, oh, yeah, what'd you have for breakfast this morning? I go, oh, yeah, I had an omelet, and I'm like going, and I'd have to stop myself because why am I lying about what I had for breakfast? And I'd go, no, that was a lie. I had cereal. I had to stop myself. I had no concept of what honesty was. I had to start from scratch. At 46 years old, I had no idea. I still make mistakes. I still almost run off with stupid boys. But I can see the patterns, and fortunately, I can break them before they get too destructive. The last thing I'd like to say is, I read a quote in a book one time, and it's helped me so much when I think about what I'm doing every day. And it said, heaven and hell are full of people that God has forgiven. The ones that are in heaven are the ones that learn from it. So thank you for being here tonight, and thank you for letting me share my story.
Thank you, Mary Jo. That was absolutely wonderful.